Welcome to Season 6 of the HPS Cast. I'm your host, Colbert Cannon. If you're new to the pod, HPS is a global investment firm. We manage approximately $90 billion in assets for a broad range of institutional investors. That capital is invested across private credit and public credit strategies. Each week, I sit down with key relationships to, partners of, and friends of the firm to learn from their experience, ask how that experience shapes their current roles, and give insights into HPS and how we operate. So with that, let's bring in our guest. Our guest this week is a longtime media executive who, among other responsibilities, now sits on several corporate boards, including some for HPS portfolio companies. She started her career in media at Time Magazine, eventually running international marketing for all of Time's global operations. She moved over to Turner Broadcasting in a global marketing role before joining People Magazine's title, People en Español, where she spent 4 years as publisher, turning that business around to profitability and strong growth. In 2008, she joined Spanish broadcaster Telemundo, and spent over a decade at Telemundo and NBC Universal, in roles such as the COO of Telemundo and the chief marketing officer of all of NBC Universal's Hispanic enterprises. She then spent several years as the president of Combate, the leading Hispanic mixed martial arts franchise, before transitioning to her current role as CEO and co-founder of New Majority Ready, a marketing consulting firm focused on helping businesses target multicultural consumers. I got to know this woman when she joined the board of Estrella Media, a leading Spanish-language TV and radio broadcaster that HBS is involved in. She is not only an incredibly effective board member, given the depth of her very relevant industry experience, but she's also a truly lovely person who I and the Estrella team thoroughly enjoy being around. So without any further ado, I'm very excited to welcome in this week's HPS Cast guest, Jackie Hernandez, board member extraordinaire. Jackie, welcome.
Colbert, thank you for having me. It's really an honor to be here. I love your podcasts. I've been listening to them. The stories are really inspiring. So it's a real pleasure. Thanks.
I mean, this is my favorite first comment from a guest ever. I love it. Jackie, let's go all the way back. I'd like to start at the beginning. Where are you from originally? Where'd you grow up?
So I'm a native of New York City. I was born and raised in Manhattan. My parents were immigrants. My father was from Cartagena, Murcia. And my mother was from Guernica, and I owe everything to them because of their work ethic and their approach to life and to really working hard, playing hard, and having a lot of balance.
They must be incredibly proud of you. So, Jackie, you end up going to Tufts for undergrad. Why was that the right choice for you?
So I applied to a number of schools. Tufts was one of the top ones on my list. I really loved the campus when I went to visit it. It also offered me the best scholarship at the time. And given that I was paying my way through school with scholarship loans and working as a waitress, that was very much a consideration for me.
I get it. What did you study undergrad? What did you focus on there?
So it's interesting. I went into uni thinking I'm going to be a lawyer. You know, international law, they had the school, Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy. And then I came out as an English literature and art history major and with a big passion for communications and marketing. Tufts didn't have a marketing curriculum at that time, but I was taking classes with the museum school and Emerson that they were offering as options. And it's when I really realized I loved marketing communications and the power of art and words coming together and what they can do to really instill emotion. And that's when I decided I want to go into advertising.
Well, so then help me with the timeline. You ended up getting an MBA at Baruch College. Did you go straight to that or did you work in between?
My first job was at the Boston Globe, where everyone who started at the Boston Globe, I think the New York Times too, had to start in classifieds. So yes, I went to college and then took classified ads.
We're dating ourselves, Jackie, that we know what classifieds are, but yes, keep going.
I agree. I was pretty fortunate because usually you have to do that for at least a year. But about 8 months in, a woman went on maternity leave and she happened to be Hispanic and happened to have the Hispanic DMA. And they needed someone who was bilingual and bicultural. So I was quickly moved into display advertising and really loved getting out and meeting the clients and the people. So that was my first foray into sales. The beginning of my career was all sales marketing back and forth.
So then what was the decision to go back to business school? Why was that important to you?
So I moved back to New York and I missed my parents after a couple of years. And I was still working at Village Voice, Time Magazine. And I was taking a lot of classes, but they were unmatriculated. And I was like, this doesn't make sense. You know, if you're going to go through the classes, go get an MBA. And so Baruch was the school that offered the best night class programs. Otherwise, I would have to either do an executive MBA and take off a couple of days from work. So this seemed the best way to do it. It was also very affordable. And I loved the experience. And I love that exposure.
That must have been an incredibly busy time for you. I mean, your day job plus your night job. That must have been intense, Jackie.
I had no weekends. I was not happy about that. But I was happy that I finished and got the MBA and I was able to show something for it.
So tell me about your time at Time. You know, you were in a marketing role. You eventually ran international marketing for them. And I'm curious, you know, you obviously you had an interest in international things from an early age for obvious reasons. How different was the sort of rest of world marketing responsibilities versus the domestic type roles?
Oh, great question. It was an eye-opener for me because I really learned the different cultural nuances. How you negotiate in Japan, especially as a woman, was very different than how you would do it in the U.S. And going from region to region and even country to country, you got a real appreciation for culture and for how people did things in certain cultures. And then I think it's where I really learned the skill of negotiating and being more reflective of who you're negotiating with, style-wise.
Yeah. And Jackie, in that, I mean, some of that obviously you just learn on the job, but how else did you learn what you didn't know? Were there mentors who helped you out? Like, how did you actually figure out what you weren't as competent in?
I definitely, at that time, I've always had mentors. I've always believed in seeking people that are amazing and incredible that can help. And at that time, I had a boss, Richard Hine, who was British. And he had traveled around the world, lived in France and many different markets. And he was a great person to kind of help me through that. He also was running international marketing before me for a number of years. So he had been through a lot of the different regions.
So after some time at Turner, you then go to People en Español, where you become the publisher. What was People en Español?
So People en Español was the leading Hispanic magazine at the time. We transformed the business model to becoming the leading Hispanic marketer to help all the businesses that were really leaning in and exploding in that space. It was a 2004, P&G, McDonald's, Ford, all of them were just beginning to realize the size and the power of this Hispanic market. And that was super exciting to me because personally, obviously, but also being able to see the numbers and help people understand what sometimes was a misrepresented or misunderstood market and show them how when they connected with it, they could really grow their business exponentially.
And we'll get to it eventually. You and I sit on the board of obviously a Spanish language broadcaster, and we think a lot about the, you know, that market. This was early days. What made that interesting? Give our listeners a little bit of a sense of the power of the, you know, the Hispanic consumer in the U.S. in particular.
So around that time, Business Week came out. I was interviewing, and I think around the same week that I was prepping for the interview, Business Week had a cover, and it was the Hispanic boom. And it showed the population numbers, how this is an over-indexing consumer, how certain categories like CPG would just explode with growth if they were really to understand and lean in. Beauty. I mean, the list went on and on. And I remember reading it and thinking, obviously, personally, this is interesting to me. People in Espanol was always on our dining room table and my mom would share it with her friends. And the space, we always had Spanish language television in the house. But professionally, I was like, wow, this is exploding. And it literally had all the trends that were going on outlined by the census. And I was like, okay, this isn't just an opinion. These are facts. These are stats. And that's what got me super excited.
The publisher title, in my experience, means you often wear a lot of different hats. How did you divide your time and how did you come up the curve? You said it's the first time managing a P&L. Like, how'd you come up the curve on the things you hadn't done before?
The big thing for me was usually magazines at that time took 7 to 10 years to become profitable. And when I joined, it was about six years old. So I really wanted to get it to profitability pronto. Very fast. You know, that was the goal. And it was looking at what are we doing as a company that's maybe we shouldn't be doing? And then what are we doing that we need to lean into more? And that's where really becoming Hispanic experts was a big deal for the future. We became profitable within 6 months. And it was really pivoting and doing massive research studies, insights, going to clients and being able to give them information that was very powerful, specific to their category of business and their industries, and then offering really integrated solutions. So it wasn't just a magazine ad. We would develop events and 360s. And, you know, we were the first to go to market. And back then, this was pretty early, with the ultimate bilingual entertainment website for Hispanics, using People in Español's content, but then also going through all the content that lived within the Time Inc. inventory and their portfolio, and pulling and culling what we knew would resonate with the younger bilingual Hispanic consumers that at that time were gravitating more towards online.
Interesting. Okay. So after several years of that, in 2008, you joined Telemundo. How did that opportunity come about, Jackie?
So one of our clients was Telemundo, and they were a big partner of ours. And during that process, the president of Telemundo, Don Brown, became a big mentor of mine. So here we go with the mentorship theme again. And, you know, he was wonderful, and we worked very well together. And he asked me to come over as his chief operating officer, overseeing revenue, brand marketing, and overall kind of strategy and digital, which was just starting to really grow for Telemundo as well. And it was an opportunity of a lifetime. You know, it was at the time, Telemundo was a very distant number two to Univision.
Well, and let's stop there for a second, Jackie. For our listeners less familiar, what is Telemundo? What was that business when you joined?
Telemundo is one of the leading broadcast networks for Hispanics in the U.S. And at the time, it competed with Univision. And Estrella Media would be in that category as well.
Got it. Okay. So then you mentioned the span of responsibility as the chief operating officer there. Tell us about what that job actually entailed and how you drove your efforts there.
It entailed living on American Airlines. I was on the road a lot, you know, overseeing revenues, which was a big piece of the roles. Ad sales was in New York, but then marketing, digital, and everything else was in Miami. Plus, we had a cable network that I oversaw in LA. And as you know, when you work in sales, you are also not in your office. You're on the road meeting where your clients are, but telling your story and really evangelizing the vision for what you're doing. So it entailed a tremendous amount of travel, which I also think was really helpful to me because I got to see different segments of Hispanics, different viewer audiences in different markets and the nuances of, you know, not all Hispanics have the same dialect, the same, you know, similar habits, but not the same.
Yeah. Well, and Jackie, I mean, you've always been an incredibly effective voice on the Estrella board on this exact point, which is I think people who didn't grow up in that community tend to think of the Hispanic consumer as monolithic. And of course, it's not.
Absolutely.
So then when you look back on your time at Telemundo, you know, big job, interesting stuff. What are you most proud of?
The transformation. So a distant number two, 17% market share. Very David and Goliath, with Univision being the Goliath, having over 80% of the market, really coming in and doing two things. One, differentiating the brand, not trying to be Univision Lite, really differentiating what the brand meant. And then secondly, galvanizing the troops, which at the time, unfortunately, had a culture of a mindset of being number two, and letting them see our path to number one and really working with them on, you know, understanding what they needed to do and what we all together needed to do to be able to get to our goal.
Let me understand that a little bit better, because as you say, I mean, forever, Univision was the gorilla in the space, and it's easy culturally to sort of fall into the rhythm of being number two. How do you break that? How do you change that?
So, you know, I think saying to someone, act like number one is one thing,
yeah.
But I think giving them a path and saying, we're going to do programming that's different. We're going to do more rip from the headlines, real life stories, more action adventure. And at the time, in English language television was becoming very kind of edgy. You know, you had Scandal and all these programs out there, but Spanish language television was still very Cinderella. So we're going to move away from that, and we're going to create content that's going to reflect the consumer and what they're watching in other languages, but in Spanish. Mm. The second piece of it was also giving them a path for, here are the efforts that we're doing, the investments that we're making, the strategic initiatives. And one big one for us was acquiring the rights to the World Cup. We knew that would be a game changer. And we had to make the case for it and make the investment for it, but then really have everyone understand why we were doing it. And I cannot tell you the amount of excitement that came from that. Because if you're Hispanic, you probably love soccer and your country is probably represented in the World Cup. And that kind of just really galvanized. And then the final one was really integrating into NBC Universal Comcast. Telemundo used to kind of be in Miami and kind of work in a silo. And when Comcast bought NBC Universal, Steve Burke saw, who was the CEO at the time, saw the potential of what Telemundo could be. And he was all about making it number one and really integrating it into the company with cross promotions and, you know, tie-ins to theme parks and to the film divisions. And that was so inspiring to Telemundo too, because we all saw that we belonged to a bigger part of something.
Yeah, you're no longer this silo down there. That makes a ton of sense. Well, in the wake of that success, you then became the chief marketing officer for all of NBC Universal's Hispanic enterprises. So you're in that seat for about 3 years, and then you decided to leave and become the president of Combate. Tell me about the decision at that point. You'd been at a really big company for a really long time, and you went to a different direction. Why?
Well, interestingly, when I left because I wanted to start my own consulting firm. I had so much success working with the amazing people across NBC Universal, I thought maybe I could work with different categories outside media and set out to start my own company. And the first client was Combate Americas. And before I knew it, the board of directors said, we really need you to come on and run the business and operate it for us. So I gave them a 2-year commitment because I actually fell in love with the sports world.
Yeah. Well, so tell people, what is Combate?
So Combate is the leading Hispanic mixed martial arts franchise. Currently, it's on Univision, and it's doing incredible ratings at midnight on Fridays. And its whole model is around country versus country. So I kind of developed that because of my World Cup passion. And I said, wow, what if we made it Copa Combate, and they fight for a cup, and we kind of overlay the sports. And it was very successful, and it's doing gangbusters.
So you got distracted on your way to New Majority Ready by Combate, but then it was time to focus on your consulting firm. Tell us what it means to help businesses target the multicultural consumer.
So it means different things to different businesses, but essentially it's really showing them the opportunity cost and also what they might be leaving on the table. The youth market, millennials and Gen Zs, are increasingly multicultural. You sometimes can't even check one box. And so really understanding how to connect and what's going to make it tick.
When you see customers do really smart things in terms of targeting a historically less targeted consumer, what are they doing?
I really love what Estrella is doing. You know, when HPS came in and I joined a little over 2 years ago, I've seen that they've been laser focused on the majority of their consumers. So again, not just targeting Hispanics, but looking at, Estrella has the highest composition audience of Mexican Americans. Mexican Americans are the majority of Hispanics, 62%. So really kind of leaning in and understanding how do we speak to that consumer in a way that's differentiated. And I think the recent content partnership, co-productions with Azteca TV, which is one of the leading media companies in Mexico, is going to speak to that. It's creating content for Mexicans, but for both sides of the border.
Makes a lot of sense. Okay, so now I want to tell the story about how you and I met. So we are on a board together. You've now started taking on corporate board roles. And it's funny because I believe in what I'm about to say wholeheartedly. Sometimes when you want something to happen, if you just say it out loud enough to people, it'll happen. So I was with a mutual friend of ours, Rob Warshauer. We'd just gotten involved in Estrella Media, a Spanish language TV and radio broadcaster. And we needed to augment the board with people who had lived and breathed in that space for a long time. And so I was with Rob and I said, you know, I just would love to find a really smart Hispanic media executive who like gets that space and understands it. I can add value at a board level on certain things, but that's not my world. Like, I'm just not great at that. He goes, oh, you got to meet my friend Jackie Hernandez. And I said, who's that? He goes, well, she was the former CEO of Telemundo. I was like, oh, give me her number right now. So you and I met several years ago. You know, you've now started taking on more of these roles. How different is it adding value as a board member versus an executive? And how have you thought about that transition in your career?
You know, they say governing versus managing, but it's very true. It's you're there to support the leadership in making the best decisions and helping them, help guide them into opportunities instead of, you know, managing the business for them or micromanaging them. And it's a very big distinction. The other thing is, you know, as a board member, you're also able to have a 30,000 view of things. So you can see trends that are happening that maybe the management team, which is working the day to day, can't see. And so it offers you an opportunity to really be able to be in the front row, watch everything that's going on, but also bring different perspectives.
Jackie, do you find it hard ever to be a step removed from the action?
I do sometimes, I have to admit. But I also believe that it's not my place as a board member. So I kind of remind myself why I'm there and what I'm doing.
Yeah, fair enough. So Astraea, which you and I serve on the board of, is a, you know, is a smaller private company, but you're also on public company boards. Like right now, you're on the board of Victoria's Secret, which is a several billion dollar market cap public company. How different is a board role on a public company versus a private company?
You know, similar in my role, but with the public company, everything that you do is in the public eye. When you're in a private company, you're working usually with a tight group of people and you can maneuver and do things quickly and more efficiently. But with a public board, you're very aware that everything that you do is going to be scrutinized, it's going to be looked at.
Well, Jackie, let's talk about the future for a second. If you put your new majority ready hat back on, when you think about the macro trends and what's happening as, you know, the world's recovering out of COVID, what gets you excited and what do you see on the future for, you know, marketing and consulting to the Hispanic market?
So I think COVID really changed the way that we do business and how we're doing it. And for consulting, that's really great because you're no longer just consulting. You can zoom in and zoom out, literally. I think the other big thing that happened with COVID is technology ramped up. So I am now looking at different partnerships with different tech companies and data companies, AI companies. Privacy is becoming an issue. How do we connect with people? How do we get first party data and consent to be able to do that? I think also we live in a time where after George Floyd, representation has never been more important. We recently at my company launched New Majority Storytelling and it's content development, which my husband, Jack, who's amazing, oversees. And we've already optioned a deal in just a few months. And it's a story, a scripted story about a blended family. And I think we're going to see more and more New Majority stories and New Majority representation, because that's the world we live in now.
Yeah, makes a ton of sense. Well, I imagine listeners can tell exactly why when you and I first talked, I thought we absolutely need to get Jackie on the Astraea board. You're incredibly thoughtful about this space, and we are excited about what you're up to in partnership with us and what you're doing going forward. So exciting stuff, Jackie. With that, let's move to the last segment of the pod, which is something we like to call best ideas. It's where we offer up something that's added value in our lives recently called best ideas, because it's our goal as investors to always maximize exposure to those. Jackie, you're our guest. I'm going to ask you to go first. What's your best idea this week?
So increasingly in business and in boardrooms, we're hearing more and more about what companies are doing around equity and inclusion, as well as global climate change and long-term sustainability. And so I've really been leaning into that area, the ESG area, trying to learn and see everything that I can in this evolving space. And I recently read a book that I is my best idea for this pod, and it's called Net Positive. It's written by former Unilever CEO Paul Polman and a sustainability guru named Andrew Winston. And the whole premise of the book is about how courageous companies thrive by giving more than they get. And it's example after example of companies that have really leaned in to do the right thing and ended up driving tremendous value for their companies. And it looks at companies and calls them net positive based on three things. Do they improve the life of everyone they touch? The customers, the suppliers, the employees, the shareholders. Do they take ownership for social and environmental impact? And finally, do they really innovate and transform? And I think the theme here is transform. I think we all are transforming. COVID has made us transform even faster than any of us thought. And the only thing that's constant is change. And in business, that's the same. And we need to look at that. So since I look at everything through the lens of multicultural, the multicultural, especially millennial and Gen Z, is extremely concerned about the planet, about the future of our environment, and about inclusion and belonging. And so that's my best idea for this pod.
And the name of the book is Net Positive.
Net Positive.
That's a great recommendation. Thank you, Jackie. I like that one. I'm going to go slightly less erudite than that one for my recommendation, so forgive me. But as listeners know, I like to be inspired by the guest of the week. You and I serve on the board of a Spanish language broadcaster, so I started thinking about Spanish language content that I've enjoyed in recent years. So my best idea this week, then, is a personal favorite TV show from Spain, the remarkable Money Heist series on Netflix. So Money Heist, or Casa de Papel, which I think is a much better title, is an immersive bank heist thriller with a twist that the criminals have taken hostages at the Royal Mint and are literally printing €1 billion to escape with. It's told with flashbacks to various gang members and their pasts, and the heist is led in a global star-making performance by Alvaro Morte, known only as the professor in the TV show. It's fast-paced, it's complicated, and has this plot that will keep you guessing. And one of the things I love about it as an American, that, you know, the cast are all prominent Spanish actors, but they've had limited international recognition previously. So they're all incredible, but you're unlikely to have seen them before if you're not Spanish. The first season is great and stands on its own, but there are now 5 seasons available and they're all quite fun. So in honor of one of the great Spanish media executives out there, my pick this week is Money Heist on Netflix. Jackie, sounds like you've seen it.
I love it. And I love that that's your pick. Can I ask you a question, Colbert?
You may.
So as you know, the characters in Money Heist, the bank robbers, they all have code names, which are, I think, a city from anywhere around the world. If you were in the Money Heist, what would your name be?
I mean, this is amazing. Listen, I think I'd have to go with Anchorage. And the reason for that is I was born in Alaska, which is completely ridiculous. Like, I was there for a couple of years and then actually grew up in North Carolina. But you need a distinctive one, like Tokyo. And, you know, like there's good names in the show. And if I just went New York, like that feels too, you know, there's a million people from New York. So I'm going to go with Anchorage as mine. Jackie, what's yours?
Bilbao.
Oh, I love it.
It's right next to Guernica. It's the capital of the Basque region and it honors my mother.
I love it. All right. So listen, everybody needs to watch that and come up with what their own code name would be for the show. Jackie, with that, it's time to say goodbye for the week. You are a true pleasure to work with, and we are looking forward to finding more ways to work together going forward.
Ah, I appreciate it. And I really love to be on this podcast with you.
Thanks again to our guest, Jackie Hernandez. Check out our show notes to learn more about Jackie and her work with New Majority Ready. You'll also find a link to Jackie's best idea, the book Net Positive by Andrew S. Winston and Paul Pullman, and to mine, the Spanish TV series Money Heist. This podcast was brought to you by At Will Media with HPS Investment Partners. Please be sure to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you like to listen.